Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's the 25th of April, Thursday, the 25th of April, 2023. Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Professor Roger O'Sullivan, Director of Ageing Research and Development at the Institute of Public Health. A new report has found that women are less active despite high awareness of the health benefits of physical activity. Owen Beattie will speak to Christy Sweeney, chairperson of St. Bridget's Pitch and Putt in Kilcullen. The Liam Sherry Memorial Cup event takes place at the weekend, and the club has also just opened up a museum. I'll speak to Brian Mooney, guidance counsellor and education columnist at the Irish Times. Focus on the child, not the exam result. Are we putting too much pressure on students? We'll find out more. And then Mairead Ryan, a teacher at Piper's Hill College, will be on to tell us about how Piper's Hill College in Naas has been named Ireland's Walking School of the Year. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in 045 898 999. If you want to email me, studio@kfmradio.com, or you can send a text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
A gender gap in physical activity levels between men and women in Ireland and Northern Ireland has highlighted the need to address barriers to physical activity for women and other population groups. That's according to a new report, Mind the Gap, which explored physical activity in both jurisdictions. I'm joined now on the line by Professor Roger O'Sullivan. He's Director of Ageing Research and Development at the Institute of Public Health. Good afternoon, Professor.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Tell us firstly about this survey and what you found.
So this survey was undertaken in July 2021, and we were really interested to know the knowledge in the population of the benefits of physical activity, the risks of inactivity. Did people know the recommended number of minutes of physical activity? And was there a relationship between knowledge and actually action? And also about where people got their sources of information from. It was of people aged 18 plus, and the same survey was carried out in Ireland and Northern Ireland by Lucid Talk.
Mm. We see here that almost half of respondents in Ireland, 46%, knew the weekly recommendations to do at least 150 minutes of physical activity, although only 3 in 10 across both jurisdictions, so Northern Ireland and in the Republic, were actually physically active 5 days a week or more. Did you identify the reasons for this?
Well, actually, we've become much more sedentary as a population over the last 50 years. If you think about it, both of us are likely to be sitting when we're talking. Your listeners may be sitting or working. But there's a tendency to be much more sedentary. We can sit on our sofa and do our shopping. We can buy products. We can make phone calls sitting down, unlike when I was growing up. There was one phone and it was in the hallway. You had to stand up and make the call. We don't have to move to change the television stations now. So we've become much more sedentary over the last 50 and 60 years. And that's part of that issue, that actually it's become much more normal to be sedentary rather than active.
Yeah, definitely. You make a good point there that even just the small everyday activities that at one time would have, required you to be up and moving, going shopping, making a phone call, they're now something that you can do sitting down. What's interesting about the report was that 7 and 9 out of 10 people in both jurisdictions were aware of the health benefits of physical activity. It identified differences in self-reported activity levels between men and women. Did you find out why those reasons were?
So we didn't ask why you weren't physically active or why you were inactive or active, but there's a general understanding that the reasons that people aren't active are such things as time. Say, for example, it may be the appropriate facilities. It may be that actually you haven't yet found something that interests you and encourages you or enthuses you to be more active. It can be quite simple because it's about making things normal, easy, very achievable and routine. So say, for example, now if you drive to the supermarket, you can park very close to the shop, but you could actually park that little bit farther away and get your steps and your physical activity into your daily routine, or getting off at a bus stop sooner, or apparently taking up dance, because when you dance, you bring together a number of different functions. So one, you've got physical activity, and you've got your cognition for remembering the dance steps, but also you're having the social component to that. So it's about building it into your routine. If you're not the type of person who enjoys going to the gym, maybe swimming or cycling, it's about finding something that really works for you. But you asked a question about knowledge, and it's really interesting. Whilst people may be aware of physical activity or the benefits for, say, mental health, or maybe managing a healthy weight, or maybe managing stress, or even improving your sleep, there was less of an understanding of the benefits around for brain function and some cancers. So that's why it's important just to understand the wide range of health benefits. So it helps with type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, falls. As you get older, it's important to maintain your strength and to build strength and to try to maintain your muscle. So that's one of the benefits of being active, physically active on a regular basis.
Absolutely. I think, Roger, it's probably something that we're all guilty of. You know, I would say I'd know the benefits of exercise, but I have to admit that, you know, most days I go to work, come home, make dinner, and I don't go out and I do exercise, not because I know that it's good for me, but like that, it does come down to time for a lot of people. But I just want to bring you back to what you said there about the benefits of exercise in terms of health and things like cancer. Can you hone in on that a little? Bit.
So in terms of the cancer, the two types that have been identified in research is colon cancer and breast cancer. So there's really benefits in being physically active for those types of cancers. Other research has shown that the benefits of being physically active compared to being physically inactive for those particular types of cancers. So the wide range, again, in terms of brain function, cognitive function, it's so important. There's a statement, what's good for the heart is good for the head. So that's really important. Those very simple messages are important to take out of this. And you're right. We all know, or maybe we don't all know, but we recognise the importance of what's good for us. But actually, it's about moving that into action.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that came out was that actually women had high levels of knowledge of the benefits. More so than men in terms of the benefits of being physically active, but they had high levels of knowledge of the recommended number of minutes. They had lower levels of activity than men and more likely to be inactive than men. There's the issue of time, which you talked about. There's the issue of feeling safe. There's the issue of access to suitable facilities and activities. I imagine, although this research didn't focus on that, but I imagine the issues are related to that often women take on care and responsibilities for children and for relatives. And that also eats into the time. So it's part of that is societal responsibility, but also family responsibility, trying to say, okay, it's important to get the exercise into your daily life.
I imagine, and we know that generally women do carry most of the domestic load at home, so that could be a factor too. Another interesting one was that the survey found that people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds or a lower level of education were more likely to be inactive because they were found to have less knowledge of the benefits. Did you identify any more reasons there?
That's part of the issue of our health literacy. And if you think about that, health literacy is so important in terms of the decisions that we make and recognising the benefit. And part of this is actually ensuring that messages around the health benefits are shared in a way that we recognise them and we can apply them to our everyday life. The example that we were talking about is trying to make things routine, trying to recognise that actually if you can break up the day of being inactive. So at work, is there an option that you can, if you're a desk-based or an office-based worker, can you actually stand for part of the day? Does your employer support you maybe to have a standing desk?
Mm.
If you're at home and you're watching television, maybe you could stand between the advertisements. Mm. If you're making a phone call, try standing when you're making a phone, because that's really useful for a weight-bearing exercise. Your body has the weight, and that's quite useful for building muscle. So it's all about recognizing that some exercise is good, more is better. It's never too late to start. So if you haven't been active before, you can start. You can start gradually, and it can grow. And it's about finding something that works for you and recognizing that every minute counts.
Okay.
When you're thinking about being active.
Amazing. And I suppose then identifying and going forward, maybe how we can make people more aware of the benefits of exercise across all sections of society, Roger.
What's really notable is people, in your role, you have an important role in informing people about exercise, because they depend on the number one source of information was the media in Northern Ireland and Ireland, and that's TV, radio and websites where people found their information about the health benefits of being physically active. So you have your role, when you get the chance, highlighting the benefits, highlighting the minutes, helping people understand the difference between moderate intensity physical activity and more vigorous, because that's its sources of information. Where we get information about our health and well-being from.
Okay, Professor Roger O'Sullivan, Director of Ageing Research and Development at the Institute of Public Health. Thanks very much, Roger, for your time.
Dare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, I always knew it, but we have very, very keen listeners in KFM, and someone has texted in to say, Caoimhe, you said that it was the 25th of April when it's actually the 27th, and I apologise. I said to Owen earlier on today, all this week I've been thinking one day is one day, Monday, and then I woke up yesterday and I thought that it was a weekend. It's just been crazy, so I don't know what's going on with me, but obviously my mind is not the full shilling. Someone else has texted in to say, can you please tell me why Patricia Ryan rang a Thai Gardaí when her office is surrounded by Monasterevin, Kildare, Rathangan stations? Just wondering why. In relation to that message, for people who don't know, unfortunately a person was attacked in Patricia Ryan's constituency office earlier this week. Thankfully, they are okay. The person who attacked that woman was sectioned under the Mental Health Act. In relation to that message, they rang a 999. 999 dispatchers tried to make contact with a Thai Garda station. As I understand, I'm obviously open to correction from Patricia if she is listening in. They rang 999. They couldn't actually get a hold of a Thai Garda station. So Patricia Ryan and her husband rang a Thai Garda station. That's what I understand there. And obviously, if the 999 dispatchers are calling that station, they obviously think that that is the closest one to go to. So that's all I know. That's all the information I have. But as I say, I am open to correction. Now we're going to go over to Owen Beattie, who's standing by to talk all things pitch and putt.
All right, thanks indeed, Caoimhe. And you might remember, actually, only last week we were talking to Keith Walsh about the whole area of foot golf. Well, this afternoon we're going to talk about pitch and putt, and specifically in Kilcullen, because St. Bridget's Pitch and Putt Club have an event on Saturday called the Liam Sherry Memorial Cup Competition, and they've also opened up a new museum at the club. And joining me now is Christy Sweeney. He's the chairperson of the Pitch and Putt Club out there in Kilcullen. Good afternoon, Christy, and good to talk to you.
Owen, thank you very much for having us. We're delighted to be on the radio with you. Thank you very much.
No problem at all. Good to talk to you. Tell me a bit about the club, Christy, when you were founded, and a little bit about your members.
Yeah, we were founded in 1987, and we were affiliated then to the Pitch and Putt Union of Ireland at the time. It's now the PPI, the Pitch and Putt Ireland. So, we've been going 37 years now, nearly, and we have a great membership. We've up to over 100 members at the moment, which is early in the year, yes. And we have 25% of them are ladies, And we also have up to 40 juveniles as well.
Great. So if you've great facilities out there in Kilcullen, Christie, in that fabulous complex where the GAA club is, the playground, the soccer pitches and yourselves there.
That's right. It's a hive of activity here all the time. It's absolutely, there's always something going on. Activity of all different sports. We're so lucky to be in here, in this area. Like, so the land that we have, was we got that from the Cross of Passion. And we developed it. It was all marshland. And we developed it into an 18-hole pitch and putt course.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. Brilliant stuff.
And, yeah. And we have a fabulous clubhouse here. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the Sports Capital Programme. We've gotten nearly $4,000 over the years. And the latest one, they were able to get in all new windows, heating and everything. So we have a fabulous facility here.
Tell me about Liam Sherry then, Christy, and this competition that's happening at the weekend, the Memorial Cup for Liam.
Yeah, Liam was one of the founder members here in the club. And he formed the committee back in the early days, like when they were setting up for the pitch and putt. And Liam was secretary at the time, and I was elected as chairman. And so I was chairman for the first 5 years. Liam passed away, as you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And this the competition that we're holding is in his memory, the Liam Sherry Memorial Scratch Cup. We have an online system that was set up by Mark Phelan, and they've done a great job, Mark. But we have there's three different timesheets, and we'll facilitate up to 170 people on the day, and they'll come from all over Ireland. But it's a pre-entry. You know, you have to do a pre-entry on it. So, like, we'll be busy for the whole day here. It'll be constant pitch and putt. And we'll, as I say, we'll have up to 170, 180 people go through the course. It starts on Saturday. We used to have it on a Sunday, but the Pitch and Putt Union of Ireland moved it back to the Saturday. They were trying to free up some time because the calendar was getting so full. But anyway, we're this Saturday anyway, and it'll start at 8 o'clock, you know, and it'll run for the full day. Like, it'll be all over way about 7 or 8 o'clock that evening, Saturday evening.
Great, great. And yeah, I think it's fantastic and a great way to mark Liam Sherry as well, and to kind of tip the cap to the contribution that he made to the club there, not only
absolutely,
in Kilcullen, but around the county.
Yeah, he was he was on the pitch and putt, one of the officers on the NEC, and like he's actually inducted into the Hall of Fame back in 2014. Of the Pitch and Putt Union of Ireland, which is not an easy one to get. But he's been on the NEC for a number of years, and also at the county board level and here in the club as well. So the two of us, me and himself, like, would share chairman. He'd do 3 years, and then he'd hand it over to me then for another 3 years. So that's the way we worked. And we miss him dearly because, like, he's put in absolutely so much work here in the club, like, you know, and setting up the course and creating the standard that it is today.
Okay, before I let you go, Christy, I mentioned at the outset that there's a new museum that you've opened up there. Tell us about that.
Liam set up in 2004 in a small section of the clubhouse here. So we acquired an extra room. So we've turned that into the only one in Ireland, a PPI museum. We have many really here in the club. So we'll be opening that on the Friday of the National Match Play. So it will be opening up. It's the Liam Sherry Room, and it also houses the only pitch and putt museum. And like, just thank, like, the community employment has been absolutely fabulous for us here. You know what I mean? And Tracy Dwyer and Martin Hayden was over at the. We had a day for the 1500s on the 6th of February, and we had Tracy over, and we'd like to thank Kildare County Council, who also funded the day as well. Like. And only for Tracy's doing fabulous work around Kilcullen here, and we appreciate it. And what do you call, we had, as I say, we had TD Martin Hayden over on the day as well.
Well, best of luck with the competition at the weekend, the Liam Sherry Memorial Cup taking place at St. Bridget's Kilcullen Pitch and Putt Club, and that is chairperson of the club, Christy Sweeney. Good to talk to you, Christy.
Okay, and thank you very much, Owen. Pleasure talking to you.
Now, according to psychologist Coleman Nochter, we should be focusing on the child and not on exam results. The role of the adult supporter is to help the teenager to put the challenge in perspective and to remind them of their competence. So the question is, are we putting too much pressure on students? Well, I'm joined now on the line by Brian Mooney, of course, guidance counsellor and education columnist with the Irish Times. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon to you.
I suppose, Brian, exam stress probably kicks in around this time now, and it's you know, shoulder to the wheel for many students, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a reality which I think adults know about at a practical level. At a psychological and emotional level, I don't think we've any idea, you know, how it is, because I think we forget emotionally after a number of years, you know, how stressful the whole exam process is. I'll always remember when I was doing some postgraduate studies way back in about 25 years ago, and I was sitting with a group of my own Leaving Cert students at the time, and I was preparing for exams, and when I heard, it was, you know, one of these end of year masters and the priest saying, "I know how you're all feeling," I literally felt like jumping up in the church and screaming, "You have no idea," because I had piano wires in my stomach because I was facing exams myself within a day or two. And I think for adults, often we do forget that we realise, yes, exams are stressful, but when you're actually going through it, you know, the emotional stress for young people can be far more than I think that we realise.
Absolutely.
Because I think it tends to fade after a number of years of our own experience.
Well, we hear it time and time again. There is so much focus here on the one day or the one couple of weeks of exams,
yeah,
and not really enough on continuous assessment and different types of examinations, in terms of some people aren't that academically minded in terms of like a book, but
well,
could
can,
be very
can
bright.
We just stop there for one second? Mm. Firstly, every time the Department of Education through the State Exams Commission and the NCCA, you know, have updated a curriculum, and that comes from the NCCA originally, you will find that more and more subjects have components that are taken before the actual written paper in June. I mean, if you look at, for instance, the curriculum in PE now, 50% of that is finished by the time they actually meet the exam in June, as with art. And then you have the oral Irish and with 40%, and then you have the oral continental language with 20%, and then you have geography with 20% project, and I could go on and on. So effectively, a lot of subjects now have components that are actually taken before the exams. But even where the exam itself is the be-all and end-all, this idea that somehow, you know, the Leaving Cert, the year you do it, is Beatrice Brook, and if you don't make the points, you know, that's it. You know, you're finished. That's a total nonsense.
Mm.
I myself am responsible in terms of, I chair a number of boards of management in Dublin of further education colleges, where we would have pre-law programs, pre-business programs, pre-science programs, etc., where a student who might even get a very modest result in the Leaving Cert overall and wouldn't get the points to be able to get into some of the high point faculties in those subject areas can do a 1 year PLC at level 5, so long as they do well in their pre-law, pre-business, pre-science, whatever it is, and if they do particularly well, they will get an offer in Commerce and UCD, Law and UCD, Bess and Trinity or whatever, if they actually get their distinctions at the end of that. And we also have a scenario now where we have many Irish students going to, say, for instance, the Dutch universities through the UNICAS website, where effectively they don't even know about points. They simply look for, you know, say, on average 350 points with 2 H5s and 4 passes, and you can be doing psychology or you can be doing physiotherapy and some of these degree programs that are 550, 600 points here in Ireland. And of course, then, when you're 23 years of age, you can go to university as an adult and you don't have to worry about what you got in your Leaving Cert. It comes down to your life experience up to that date. And even for students who don't get high points, there are access programs, you know, where students can begin more slowly through an access course. And then if they are successful, they can gradually make their way into a full degree program. So overall, the perspective that the Leaving Cert in the year you do it is a be-all and end-all, and that if you don't make the points, that's it, you're destroyed for the rest of your life. It's total nonsense.
Absolutely.
Because the alternate routes to get what you want in the career that you really want are there for everybody, provided you're prepared to be flexible, provided you're prepared to look at the alternative entry routes.
Is it changing a little bit now, Brian? You're probably more au fait, but I feel like here in Ireland there is a push after you come out of school to just go straight into college, and there's, if you don't go down that route, you're almost seen as a waster or something like that. But I remember when I was on Erasmus in Sweden, like there was people in my course that were like 28, 29 first year,
yeah,
you know, that kind of way, and
yeah,
that was very normal over there.
But you see, this is the problem. You know, we build this thing up that, you know, you have to go, as you say, after your Leaving Cert in, and if you don't, you're a failure. I mean, how many people are dropping out of college courses in the first 6 months because they had this perspective that they had to pick something? Mm. They may not have been ready to pick, they may not have been sure, but they picked it. And, of course, the huge difference, as you know, between college and school is school, the system takes you through it. You bloody well get up in the morning, and if you go Mitchin, your parents get a phone call pretty quickly. So effectively, it's like being on the escalator in the airport going to the flight. You're kind of carried along by the system. When you go to college, there's nobody doing that. Nobody's ringing your mammy or daddy. Nobody's encouraging you to go to lectures if you're not turning up. So the only thing that you know that will get you through a college degree is the actual commitment and interest in the content itself, not whether your friends are going to it or whether it's a cool course and everybody thinks it's the best course to take. You have to be personally committed, because when you get to the dirty months of winter in January and February and you're living away from home and you may have been out with your friends the night before or whatever, getting up for that 9 o'clock lecture is a big ask. Unless, of course, you are committed and passionate about the course, then it's not a problem. Then you can engage with all the other stuff in college. But ultimately, many students go and pick degrees and they don't express that litmus test that I'm suggesting, and saying, do I really feel passionate about the content of this course? Do they even look at the content of the course in some cases? So I'd say to students, be absolutely sure. And if you're not sure, look at maybe doing it as a further education program for 12 months. If at the end of 12 months you're still absolutely happy with it, then go ahead and do it at degree level. And effectively, you'll probably have an easier first year having done an FE program, because it's further education, it's not school, but it's not university. They won't call your parents, but they'll write you a letter quietly to your home address in an envelope a week or two after you start missing lectures and say, will you come in and have a chat with us? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it helps students adapt from the very hands-held school system we have to the very unhands-held third-level university system we have.
I couldn't agree more, Brian. I remember going down to the University of Limerick and literally went from being in a school where I couldn't go to the toilet without asking.
Correct.
And then you're literally fending for yourself, finding out that you have an assignment due the next day, and you're kind of thinking, why did no one email me? Why didn't
exactly.
Why wasn't I told, you know?
Absolutely. I remember I was teaching in Oakland's at Stillorgan for many, many years, and I organised with a friend of mine who was a senior lecturer in engineering in UCD to show a group of students who were interested in engineering around the faculty, etc. And we organised that he'd meet them at the reception desk in the engineering faculty at 2:30. And he was there at 2:30. 60% of the students who were interested were there at 2:30. The other 40% turned up, drifted in between 2:30 and 2:45. And they were at me the following day, you know, giving out stink that nobody came back to collect them and nobody would, you know, told them where the other group had gone, etc. And I said, you have just learned the biggest lesson of your life in relation to university before you ever went there, because that is the reality. You're no longer going to be handheld. If it says 2:30 and you're not there at 2:30, nobody's hanging around and waiting for a list and seeing where the other kids are gone, because you're now all adults. And that's the difference. And college is that place. And you need to be sure that the course that you actually apply for is one that you're committed to, because you're not going to survive it otherwise.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, Brian, because I'm sure there's parents listening in here today, and some of which may be pushing children down one, you know, road in terms of college or that kind of thing. Maybe what their child actually needs is a year out, or as you said, for a PLC. What would you say to them?
Parents can give their children absolute quality advice based on their life experience, but you cannot relive the things you wish you'd done through your kids. You cannot project onto them your own expectations and hopes and fears. They are unique human beings who will have to chart their own course. Yes, be there for them. Yes, be there to advise them. Yes, listen to them. But for whatever you do, do not try and dictate what you think they should do, because ultimately, I have met too many adults in their 30s who have said to me, I'm in the wrong career, but my mother really wanted me a doctor or a solicitor, whatever it is, and they are not happy people. Ultimately, every one of us has to find our own pathway through life.
Okay, Brian Mooney, guidance counsellor and education columnist with the Irish Times. Thanks very much, Brian. Now we're moving on to a school in Naas, because Piper's Hill College has been named one of Ireland's travel schools of the year for walking mode at a ceremony in Dublin earlier this week. And I'm joined now on the line by Mairead Ryan. She's a teacher at Piper's Hill College. Good afternoon, Mairead.
Hi, Cuiva. How are you?
Very good, Mairead. Listen, it's a great achievement for everyone up in Piper's Hill. And tell us, I suppose, how did you go about it and how did you get this going?
Yeah, we were absolutely delighted to accept that award during the week from the Green Schools in Dublin Zoo. Well, I suppose there was a lot of teachers involved. I'd like to mention my colleagues, Michelle Costigan and Chloe O'Connor as well. And an awful lot of students got on board to help us with this. So in our Green Schools committee, they decided to do a couple of things. So we had great fun deciding what we were going to do. On the first, for the travel challenge, so you pick 10 days in a period of time, and the students decided to try and promote the walking mode to school as well as park and stride by, first of all, handing out sweets at a roundabout up here close to Naas. We're on the Kilcullen Road out of town. So just to get a little bit of chat going. So they were handing out sweets every single morning to students who they met passing by, and then they kind of get a group going, walking in together, get a little bit of a buzz going around about like that. They were also handing out green stickers, so if you collected 8 stickers over the 10-day period, you'd, you know, be in with a chance of winning canteen vouchers. We publicised it on our social media platforms. We made posters, infographics, and then we carried out a couple of other little projects throughout the school.
It's really a great achievement, because many of people will know in Naas, Piper's Hill is one of the schools that's, you know, a good bit further out. So
yeah,
for the students to walk, like, it is a lot more of an effort than maybe the schools within the town, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge. Like, the road network is fine. It's a good road on the way out, but we are that little bit far. So we increased the numbers by 50%, so we were happy with that. We still have more to do. Like, every car that we stop coming into our campus is a bonus. You know, that you'd be aware of the congestion in our campus. So I think it's just making parents aware as well of the drop-off points that we got on the road outside. Now, we still have work to do, but like businesses like Westwood Trailers and Mr. Price and the Garda Station said we could use those as drop-off points if parents wanted to drop them along the way to get them a bit closer. The other thing we started work on was a dry room in the school. Mm. So for those kids who get wet on the way to school, we're working on a room. Now, you know, rooms are hard to come by in schools of our size, but we found one, and we're going to change it into a dry room. So the idea being that students who get wet on the way to school from rain will be able to hang their coats to dry for the day. They can even use hair dryers, check themselves out in the mirror before they go to class. So we ran a non-uniform day and collected funds for that towards that room.
That's a brilliant idea. And yeah, like I was saying, like you were saying there, the drop-off points are essential, because if you have students living in Monreed, it's not really, you know, feasible for them to be walking up to the Kilcullen Road, is it?
No, they can't walk the whole way. So it is, you know, we'd be hoping to work with the council a bit more on this to try and get one or two more spots along the way, you know, for a drop-off. I think that would be the key for us, because we are that bit far out.
Absolutely. Well, Mairead, we wish you the best of luck. And I do actually drive the ring road on the way to work. And I have to say, I do see a lot of the students walking in, sometimes in the rain too. So
great.
Fair play to them.
And look, cycling is an option as well. And we are going running a bike event. So you might see about 40 of us cycling there on the 15th of May around Naas.
Brilliant. Well, listen, send us in that when you're doing that, and hopefully we can get you on then. And best of luck with everything else.
Great, Cuiva. Thanks a million.
That's Mairead Ryan, a teacher in Piper's Hill College in Naas. They've been named as Ireland's Walking School of the Year. So well done to all of the students and teachers involved there. Just one last message before I go. Someone has texted in. Teresa Smith in Naas said, "Hi, Cuiva. That was very good advice for students in regards to what course they should do in college." And yeah, the advice there, Teresa, is that if in doubt, maybe a college course might not be the best thing for your child at this moment in time. And thanks very much to Brian Mooney, always great with the advice for students. That's all we have time for today. I will be back, of course, at the same time tomorrow between 2 and 3.